You're listening to Confessing Animals with Jen Harris and Vanessa Arrigo, rebel poets, real rebels, really talking poets, rebelling and listening.
Okay, don't interrupt me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Confessing Animals podcast. I am Jen Harris.
And I am Vanessa Arrigo. Yeah. That's my theme song to my talk show.
Why don't we have that as our intro? I would listen to this podcast immediately if I heard that. We have a really amazing guest on today, and I'm super excited to introduce her to you. But first, I have to tell you this wild-ass story related to confessing animals, okay? So here's the deal. David Wayne Reed, godfather of confessing animals, dear friend, WWKC participant, incredible artist. BWR is in my life, and he's in the Kansas City arts scene, and he's part of our communities, right? Been on our show before, all these things. So DWR calls me to tell me that in Sacramento, California — we are not located in Sacramento, we are in Kansas City, Missouri — in Sacramento, California, a person went looking for a podcast about creativity and inspiration and getting out of your own way and just really finding your way to yourself creatively. That person found Confessing Animals podcast. And then that person found their friend, David Wayne Reed, featured on our podcast. Like, they didn't go looking for something that he was on. They didn't, like, it was in the ethos of the world in California. Somebody came looking for something, and then they found that, and they found the person that they were connected to. And
that's beautiful.
Right? Isn't that the most wonderful, beautiful story?
Oh, that makes me so happy. I mean, that's exactly like all we could ask for. That's what we want. Like, I'm looking for something. They found us. Then you find your fucking friend.
Yeah.
And if your friends aren't there, you're going to feel like friends after listening to 30 episodes.
Right. And I feel like with a little bit of magic happened, you know, where it was like,
we're reaching California.
We're reaching you. Hello, California. I have friends in California. I love them. I hope they're listening to the podcast every once in a while. I've been saving that to share with you because I just thought it was so magical. Like, in my brain, I tried to immediately dismiss it. I was like, ugh, algorithms. And like, this person was, you know, served up on a platter or shit. Like, it wasn't that big a deal. And I just, I refused to believe that, in that they were not, you know, they were looking for something very specific that wasn't tied to anybody they were related to. And, you know, kind of separate of all of the internet telling us how to live and what to think, they found us. And it further connected them to somebody they already love and respect. And that just made me very happy.
And there you go. And then there's more of that synchronicity. Like, you found something. And then when you find out your friend is already there, like, you know, you're in the right spot.
Right, right. It made me feel so good.
Oh my God. I love that you waited to share this with me in the recording to surprise me. That's fucking awesome. I love that story so much. Oh my God. Everybody find us. I want more people to find us.
Tell your friends that we talk about everything. And that's the summary of the podcast, which is why we can't figure out how to get sponsored. Well, today we have a WWKC, not quite original, but she's been with us for a while now. Mm-hmm. And she's moving in so many beautiful directions. So I'm excited to have Leanne Rockmore on today. Leanne also goes by LA. So LA Rockmore, she, her, hers, is a writer, a conversationalist, a professional photographer, a mother, a wife, an asker of all the questions, a collector of moments, and an encourager of souls. She hosts writing workshops in Lakeland, Florida, where she lives with her husband, three kids, and their cat, and is launching a podcast called The Gospel of Courage very soon. So you can find her at larockmore.com, gospelofcourage.com, or on Facebook or Instagram at Love Is an Action. I really enjoyed the conversation that we had with Leanne. Like, we just, it went as it does in many directions, right? But I feel like we really rooted down into some universal truths about creativity and insecurity and resistance and you know, defining a writer, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. She said something that like has really stuck with me that I love so much. She said, I live in a place that, like, it depends on, like, we can't have them think we're too weird or something like that, right? Like, she's talking about, she had this idea and about creativity or maybe, like, some kind of performance art, but she's like, but we live in a small town and maybe our income depends on them not thinking we're too big of a weirdo, right? Like, I just loved that. It just made me happy.
Well, and I think she shines a light on like there is so much truth being faced on the page and in the art that she creates in all of these different ways. But also, you know, there is an inherent danger or risk. It's not just a perception, like it's very real that if you make art that rattles people, their core beliefs, their assumptions, we talked about paradigm shifts. Mm-hmm. If you rattle those cages and those cages are directly connected to your bank account, like that's a scary, scary reality, you know?
Absolutely.
Like
but then we tie in the courage, her whole gospel of courage. And we talked a lot about the journey and the questioning and permission. And it's still brave. It's brave to talk about these things, knowing that community is still going to hear it. You know what I mean? So it's like, it all fits in together.
Totally. And then we slipped a little revenge and redemption in there. But I think today was more about, I mean, today was a bigger conversation overall. Like the revenge and redemption are a very tight clenching area in this conversation of coexistence and, you know, how they work their way into our lives and into the context of our creativity. So this is, absolutely. This is quite a dense conversation. And I'm excited for you guys to get involved in it.
All right. Get comfy. Listen in.
You ready?
Let's do it.
Well, welcome to Confessing Animals podcast, LA Rockmore. I'm happy you're here today.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Vanessa and I have waited until season 3 to ask you on because we've got to space out our WWKC OGs, get our heavy hitters in. So I'm really glad that you can join us and definitely on the heels of some projects that you're launching and some new big exciting things coming up in your art world. So I'm excited to talk about those things today.
Yeah, you have Vanessa. A lot going on. Like you are super busy, like super mom, like you are writer, photographer, mother, you're launching a podcast. You were just in this really amazing like photography, like art exhibition event I saw recently that you posted about and it has to do with like bodies. And I mean, you have a lot going on. So how do you find time for all of this or kind of tell us about your journey of like what kind of like brought you here today with us?
Oh my gosh. How do I find time for all of it?
Yeah. Like, can you just start from the beginning and tell us everything?
Everything like my whole life story?
Yeah. How do you have the energy to be here right now? You do a lot. And it's a question of how do you juggle a lot?
I mean, I don't, right? Like I let a lot of things fall a lot of the time. Like I haven't mopped the floors in my house in like a long time. It's on my agenda every weekend, but like every weekend I'm like, oh man, I forgot to mop the floor.
I'm so glad you said that because I'm literally walking around barefoot and I was like, I don't think I've mopped my floors in a really long time.
Everyone takes their shoes off at the door in our house. Because I like the idea of clean floors, but lately I've been like, please keep your shoes on. I don't want you to feel my floor.
There's a fungus of sorts. No, you know what we all, I mean, we have to let things go in order to make room for all of this art. Right. And you're a photographer, you're a writer, and now you're launching the podcast. So like you've put a lot on your plate.
Yeah. Sometimes I, you know, melt in overwhelm and not being able to keep up with all the things, but, I also always have a million more ideas than I have space for. So I feel like it's been like a kind of an intense journey of like learning and understanding my own limitations. And, you know, you guys know that I homeschooled my kids for 5 years and this is the first year that I put my kids in school. And I have a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And so this is the first year that my kids have been in school. And so far, only my big kids have started. I'm waiting for the preschool to open for my 3-year-old. They're delayed. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it was really, really like through coming to WWKC and like writing and feeling like I unlocked how I was going to start to write my novel is really when I was like, I'm not able to do all the things. And if I don't put aside some things, I'm not going to do the things until my kids are grown up. And I don't want that example for them. And I don't want that life. And so, it was really like a lot of conversations that came out of the realization of how much I felt like, oh, I feel like I can finally see the path for how I'm going to do and be the things I want to be. And it includes recognizing limitations and saying, I can't do all the things. And so you're saying like, oh my gosh, you do all these things. And I'm like, I know I do too many things. And my goal is to like really pare down to some things that, you named that I'm not going to do anymore. But, yeah.
Well, that's what it was introduced to you from the photography world into the writing world. And so I thought I talked to Vanessa about this earlier, the intentionality of the order of your words on your website specifically. You lead with writer, which I feel like, I don't know if that's always been that way, but I don't believe it's always been that way. I've known you as a professional photographer. So can you talk about what led to that shift from like a visual medium to the written word? Like, how did you come to that?
Sure. Actually, when I went to, I've always wanted to write. Okay. So like, not always. Okay. Actually, the first thing I ever wanted to do was be an actress. When I was a kid. But since I've been an adult, I've wanted to write. And I really realized that I was actually in college and I was studying marketing and I was like talking about becoming a real estate agent and all of these different things. And I had just gotten back from being a missionary in Africa and I had started a nonprofit that was working with the homeless. And that was my whole life at the time. And I was talking to my dad, I think like around my 21st birthday. And I was talking about like, how do you figure out what to do with your life? And he asked me some question, and I think it was something along the lines of like, what's the thing you can't live without? And I was like, well, writing. But my like insecurity has always just absolutely consumed me. And I went to this workshop in California a few years ago. And there was this like prompt that they had that was like a card that said, before I die, and you flip it over and you're supposed to fill in what you want to do before you die. And it's like business card size, you know? So like you get like one sentence unless you want to like be crazy and write really tiny. And I just put, I want to write my book because I know it's inside me. And that's actually where I met Ash Parsons, which is how I ended up at WWKC, was at that event. So.
I love the connection. I know, like it's such a small world. Like Ash Parsons has brought a lot of amazing people into the WWKC group. Like, so tell us about your writing. Are you a fiction writer? Do you do memoir? I mean, like what kind of, what inspires you? What compels you? What's the driving story quest journey that's inside LA Rockmore that is burning to burst forth?
Oh my gosh. I feel like, I feel like when you started with like, you do all these things, you named and called out in me how hard of a time I have limiting things and narrowing down focus. So, I think that's been a really big, struggle for me to like own that I'm a writer. And actually what I wanted to say about the last thing you asked me about, how being a writer came first is the rest of that story. I forgot was that Ash, I did Ash's mentorship and Ash had said to me, I read some piece during WWKC and Ash jumped on as the first voice to give me positive feedback. And she was like, you are a writer. And the next day, I think, is when I was like, never again will I not put that first, because it is. And I just needed someone that I really respected as a writer to say that to me in such a straightforward way. And then when we did the mentorship, she like wrote me a letter that said that too. It was just the permission that I needed to own what was already inside me. And then as far as like what I write as a writer, I'm trying to figure that out. I feel like I like play around in a little bit of everything. I've always really resonated with memoir and self-help kind of things like Glennon Doyle and Brené Brown. for a long, long time. Stuff like that. And Liz Gilbert and those amazing women. But, I've also always been someone who just loves story. And so I think that I love nonfiction, and I will pick up, I am always reading 20 nonfiction books because I just want to learn. But the reality is, like, I read a nonfiction book and I can't finish it because I take it in and I'm like, I have to go and apply this to everything in the world and change my paradigm about the way I see everything. And so I never finish the nonfiction book because by the time I'm applying this one piece, I've picked up five more. And so,
oh, you're singing my song. I cannot tell you. I have a stack on stack of good intentions. Yes. I fixed my life in a lot of first chapters, and then I don't know what the fuck else is going on.
Right. Well, and so the thing that's so beautiful about fiction is that the same paradigm shifts happen through story in a way that I don't get stuck. And so, I didn't understand how I could do that. I didn't believe that I could do that. I didn't know how to unlock writing fiction until that one prompt in WWKC, that one time. And it just came out, and it has been coming out ever since. And in that piece and in other pieces. And I had tried before, but I just couldn't unlock it. And it was that, and it was like, Anne Lamott has this thing that she says, like, if people wanted you to write more warmly about them, they should have behaved better, right? Like,
the cornerstone of my life.
Yeah. And there was this,
I was just about to say, that's a very poet Jen Harris thing. Like, I feel like you are implementing that.
So there was also this moment, I don't remember if it was a WWKC thing or an Ash's mentorship or somewhere else. And it was, I just don't remember because there were so many things at once, but I kept coming to this place in my writing where I would want to write something in the memoir category because there's a lot there, but I really kept getting stuck on what was true, like sticking to fact and realizing that I was terrified of mistaking, you know, making the mistake of presenting something that wasn't true in the category of memoir. And so, you know, there was this marriage of like that permission from Anne Lamott, right, to write about people, even if they, you know, behaved badly or whatever, but then also like, there was this moment of like, well, what might have happened was this, but this is what I remember. And I could have that permission when it comes to memoir stuff. And then there was also this place of like being able to tell my whole truth in fiction in a way that's no less true, but still is able to flow. I don't know if that made sense, but
yeah, it absolutely does. Go ahead, Vanessa.
I was just going to say, I'm really interested in two things that you said, permission and paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of people, and we use this a lot, like, I needed the permission. Someone gave me permission. I found the permission. And I am just so curious about this permission. You know what I mean? Because it's like, is it permission? Because, like, I kind of feel like you probably were writing, right? Is it the permission to, like, share it publicly and declare, like, yes, I am a writer? Is it permission to just, like, allow yourself that desire? You know what I mean? Like, I'm really curious about the word permission and how it's used, especially in the writing and the art world. Like, I've never thought about permission until it's become a very like buzzword almost. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I'm just very curious about it. And then also you mentioned paradigm shift, which is like so juicy and exciting. I can't wait to like, I don't know. I want to like think about paradigm shift a lot, but it's like, you do a lot of questioning, and I'm wondering if you're looking at the paradigm shift, like in like fiction or something, or like in your writing, are you hoping to have a paradigm shift like in your life? Because I have this mantra where I'm like, just, I got to write myself out of this. I got to write my way out of this. And I don't really know what that means, but I'm always like, if I can just write this thing, it'll get me out of whatever I don't want to be in or something. You know what I mean? Like looking for that paradigm shift, like in our actual lives, like through the writing.
Yeah, gosh. Okay. I'm a little bit ADHD, so sometimes it's really hard for me to take two big things at one time and tie them together when I'm talking. So try to bear with me. But with the permission thing, it's multifaceted for me. Like, I think growing up in like the very religious environment that I did, with like obedience and law and rules and like permission was just required for everything. And it's funny because I didn't have like, my dad is not that way. My dad, you know, never censored things and let me choose music and movies and like was very free. And I always had space to ask him a lot of questions and, I was homeschooled for 1 year when I was a kid, 1 year, because that's pretty much all we could take. And my dad would do this class with me that was like logic, and it was all about like practicing logical thinking and tons of questioning. And so like, I think that there's this part of me that needed permission in that way, of like coming from this boxed in world, needing somebody, an external force to say, yes, you can. And then there's the part of me that, as I've thought about redemption, actually, I was thinking about like, how as people do we move through life trying to redeem ourselves? And I think in a lot of ways, like we go through seasons of life where we're trying to redeem our reputation from previous parts of our lives, how other people have seen us in previous parts of our lives. And, you know, I've kind of always felt like, I touched on insecurity before, like I've kind of always felt like I'm not good enough. You know, who am I? What do I have to say that somebody else hasn't already said better? And so, you know, I think I needed that validation, you know, permission, it's kind of interchangeable in that part of the thought process.
It's such and a human experience that you're having. Like, I want to jump in and be like, I'm in this boat with you. Yeah. I was teaching a class right before we're all scheduled to talk together. And, the conversation of permission came up a lot. The cultural context of this country immediately diminishes anything that is not monetized, and your environment then gets that much smaller if you grow up within any sort of structural context, right? Religious or otherwise. And I think that permission is the freedom to move forward. But we are often raised and shaped in ways that say, like, you don't know your own path better than so-and-so knows it. So in order for you to be allowed to walk one foot in front of the other, you need to make sure it's okay with this higher power, this end goal, whatever it is, the role that you are expected to be in. And it flushes out all of the reality of choice. So I think that a lot of people in one way or another get the idea that they have to be given permission to create. I watch it in schools too, right? Like there are teachers who permanently scar their students by giving these kind of critiques and these opinions and these feedback as if they are law, as if they are the final say on something. People carry those wounds around their whole lives. I think it's the reason I have a business, because they're like, can you tell me this isn't true, please? Can you please help me undo this pain? And it didn't need to exist in the first place, you know? So I can truly see how in my own life and in so many other people's, permission is really necessary. It's that validation of what I'm doing has value, right? And when somebody makes it feel so valueless and so unimportant so early on in your life or so profoundly in your life, it's really hard to come back from that. So I really want to validate that permission seeking is really universal. I think some people, there's a comedian who makes a joke about having the confidence of like an 87-year-old white man as a 12-year-old girl, where she was like, I got bullied and I just kept doing my shit. I think some of us are built that way, where we're just like, it bounces off of us. Most of us are not, you know, most of us are carrying those thorns around with us our whole lives, trying to get somebody to help you get it out. So I think it's such an important thing to honor, and I appreciate you bringing that to the table.
Yeah. I also think we're practicing that in WWKC each week as we read our rough first drafts and we hear this positive feedback and we get used to hearing our voice. Like, I feel like that is a form of practicing permission too.
Yeah. Well, in Leanne's workshops, because you host writing workshops now too. And I think that's exactly what you're extending out to the world. Because you and I talked about that. And I was like, yes, use the format. When adapted however you want to. Mm-hmm. But the point is to give other people space. And that space is permission, right? Like, we've gathered here to write however we're going to write. That is the permission that people need to feel safe. And it, you know, there's no other key that you can give. Every other version of unlocking is entirely up to them. But like, you came to WWKC, you got really close to that door, and then the door opened for you. And then your novel is in process because of that. So you're holding that permission giving space for other people too. And that's incredibly powerful.
It is. I love that you touched on the relationship between permission and like our cultural obsession with monetization of everything. Thank you, capitalism. But like, I think that was another huge part of it is like, I felt like if I was going to say I'm a writer, I needed to be able to not be a failure at being a writer. I would have had to be published at a certain level or all of these different things. And it was really just through like being honest with myself and my people about that fear and then them giving me permission, them saying, you don't have to be any of those things to say that you're a writer. You are a writer already. Period. That really took the pressure off. Like literally this morning, I was talking to my husband about my podcast stuff that's coming up. And he asked me some question and I was like, it's absolutely unlocked because I don't have the pressure on it to make money from it right now. That is why I can like kind of move forward in the ways that I am, because it's this pressure of money is not on it in this moment.
Same. I mean, same here. Confessing Animals is it's a true passion project because somebody asked me to give them a budget of what I thought we should be making per episode. And if I include what I know our credentials offer, the amount of time we spend on it, the equipment required. Oh, no. Like, wait, I want to believe this money exists somewhere. But this is a bigger conversation that's worth the time and energy. Right. So because it doesn't have the pressure of support me, we can come to it as lovingly as we want to without all of the chaos that comes with like, if this doesn't work, my whole life is over.
Mm-hmm. And being like an inherent, like anarchist, like I, you know, my relationship with money is really complicated, but it's like, you know, that the American notion of like, if you work hard enough, then like you'll achieve success, right? Like that's the pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's the trickle down economics. This is like this golden lie. It's literally the golden lie that we've been told. And we all know that like hard work does not equal rewards because of capitalism. And when it was made so apparent to me is when I got with my partner, Ashley, who the level of talent did not equate the monetary funds or lack thereof, right? And so that's when I really realized, oh, shit. There was a quote that's like, be so good they can't ignore you. That was really in my face of like, you can have so much talent and most talented people die penniless alone in a fucking gutter and you've never heard of them and they didn't make any money. But when it was put in my face like that blatantly, when I was seeing this level of talent and this amount of hard work and there wasn't a monetary reward, I mean, that shook me at such a severe level because like we do not value talent, quote unquote. I know talent is subjective, but like it's not really valued. Our value system is completely different in America, whether it's the big butt, whether it's the, you know, Instagram likes, whatever it is. It's not about lasting, sustainable talent, right? Like it's planned obsolescence. It's in every product that we buy. You know, this is a very much like a throwaway replace culture. It's not a, you know, we make cars out of fucking steel and they last forever.
I don't think your relationship with money is complicated. I think your relationship with money is that you do not assign monetary value and worth. You do not, they are not synonymous. And I think that's the difference, right? A lot of people believe, I teach workshops about this. A lot of people believe that when they are published by said gatekeeper, an unreachable gatekeeper, someone whose door you cannot walk to, someone out there, you will then be elevated in some way as writer, as artist. It's not true. Your work is valuable in its present form, in its three lines, in its binder. It has the exact same value as the day it is or is not published. And this whole, like, I feel like we're kind of having this conversation of like, define a writer. Right? Because what does it mean? Do you have to make money off of it? Do you have to be published? Does the rest of the world have to tell you you're good at it in order for it to be valuable? Or does it just inherently hold value and worth? You know, so I don't know, Vanessa, I don't think that it's complicated. I think that you have a moral principle that's like, I understand society works this way, but this means nothing to me on a moral level.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. And I say this all the time, like most somehow, if you have money, you're a good person. And if you're poor, you're a bad person. And that is our value system here. And I have never adhered to that. I knew that at a very young age that I'd rather sleep in a ditch with somebody talented and wildly amazing and interesting that I loved than to ever, you know, be financially provided for by like someone who like I had no interest in. You know what I mean? Like, well, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, money is not worth anything to me. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
Reminder, we're not all penniless and in the gutter either. Like, I want to make sure and broadcast that real loud. Like, LA does a lot of work in this world to make money in any form, but it seems like it's mostly creative work. And I know your partner is in a creative industry also. I'm in a creative industry also. I'm not always just sitting around writing my feelings out in poetry. Sometimes I'm editing someone else's work. Sometimes I'm ghostwriting and filling in the blanks. Vanessa, I know you do editing for a living too. And it's like we're creativity adjacent so that we can feed ourselves. We can keep a roof over our heads. And the value of that is that we keep creativity at the forefront of our intentions, right? Like, I think that's the whole point of Confessing Animals is there isn't one way to do it, but this wild Brumby, this, you know, this field of horses that we've decided as being a writer, gross.
Did you call us a Brumby? What's a Brumby?
It's an Australian like wild horse.
Oh my God. I absolutely identify with a Brumby. Thank you.
Yeah. I want to validate that we like came to this as a collective, as individuals and as a podcast group. Like, you and I, Vanessa, were like, there are people who are doing creative work that are getting paid for it, who are also doing their own creative projects and aren't getting paid for it. It's all the same. It's all good work. It's just, you know, what do you utilize to feed yourself and what do you do because you love it? And can they both exist? You know, I think LA is pointing out that it absolutely can, they can exist at the same time because she's doing it.
Well, and I want to add, like earlier, Vanessa, you were asking about paradigm shifts, right? And like, I think you said something about like me being someone who asks a lot of questions. Like, the same as what you said, when I was a kid, I like very early on, I realized like, I don't want to care about stuff. I care about people. Like, I care about other humans. I want to know them. I want to know their stories. I want to be with them. I want to listen to them. I want to make them feel safe to be themselves. Like, I just want to know people. And I feel like coming through, like, unraveling my identity from like toxic theology that shaped so much of my life brought me to a place of like facing everything with questions in a way that's safe. Like, my questions got me in trouble everywhere all the time, my whole life. It was like, if I asked questions in church, it was like, you need to go somewhere else. This is not what we talk about, all of these things. And then, you know, I mean, I definitely got that personally as well, but the more that I like came to accept that it was okay for me to ask questions, like the safer the whole world became for me. But also it's like, I don't know that I'm ever like out to shift my paradigm as much as I'm just always questioning everything. And if I come to that from a place of non-judgment and I come to that from a place of like literally just being open to see all perspectives, like what happens for me is I have a paradigm shift in every conversation, because if I'm taking someone else's experience as just as worthwhile as mine, their three sentences, no matter who they are, no matter where they come from, no matter what credentials they have, no matter what gatekeepers they're in proximity to, then I can value them and be willing to see the world from their perspective. And then my paradigm shift, that's all that is. And so, you know, you asked me that and I'm like, am I out for a paradigm shift? Like, no, I'm just always asking questions and it leads to that inevitably. And also for me, like when I feel like that's a lot of what writing is for me when it's like just personal, like is just, I try not to be like, here's a way out of this, but I try to say, what question can I ask myself about what's really going on inside of me? Not because I'm looking for a way out, but just so that I can understand where I am.
Well, and the do I believe any of this, right? We have so many narratives running through us at all times. And I think that's truly the work of a writer, is to sit down in the midst of that train station and try to decide if any of this is real. Is it valid? Is it important? Does it need to live outside of me? And when you talked about the card, you know, the when I die, and that the limitation of that space, but knowing so profoundly the specific answer of writing your book, like, so that means that you honor, you know, there is something sitting inside of you that must be birthed. And I think that that's the reward of being at the center of your own internal narrative, right? Like, the paradigm shift does come with every realization, because you learn to let things go that you were raised to believe are true. You learn to let things go that you were taught are true. And, you know, you keep shedding and shedding and shedding until, you know, I mean, it's kind of what pages feel like. Just a bunch of shedding, a bunch of cat hair.
I like that metaphor as the pages as shedding, because it's almost like, you know, it's almost like turning that page and like shedding that layer, like whether you're, you know, revealing peeling the layers of the onion, or the bud is unfolding, or, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's so much. And when we say, I love writing, almost is like this distillation, it encompasses so much. Cause when I think, like, writing is reading, writing is thinking, writing is researching, writing is talking, writing is listening. You know what I mean? Like, it's, writing's everything.
Well, and I think to get to the absolute center of all of those narratives, where you're truly honoring the experience that you want to have, and you're bringing forth what's in you that you want to exist in the world with you. I mean, that kind of brings us to the gospel of courage. Like, you're talking about a truly courageous act of being one with yourself. And so, and also, you're referring to yourself as a conversationalist. And I want to know kind of what that means for you in relationship to this gospel of courage.
Oh, man. I mean, I said before, like, I really don't value anything more than just conversations with other people. Yeah. So
what do you get out of it?
I mean, that way of seeing the world the way that someone else does, like understanding that, I'm going to give context. My dad is like a philosopher and this just brilliant guy. And he has studied semiotics for a long time, just like symbols. Right. And the way that I have come to understand how nuanced, like I have loved language because for so long I thought language is this like universal thing that we use to communicate with each other. But understanding that in every conversation, every word means something different to everyone that I talk to because of every experience that they've had with that word from the moment they were born. Like, it just infuses so much depth and meaning into every conversation. And so I feel like the majority of the time, like, that I'm just hanging out and talking with people that I'm around, I just ask questions because I want to know more about how they see the world and how they came to see it the way that they see it. And so that's what I mean when I say conversationalist. Like, I, you know, I was always in trouble when I was a kid for talking too much. And, yeah, I mean, shout out.
We were talking about that on Instagram the other day. Just like, shout out to every girl or kid that kind of talks too much on their report card. I feel this.
To go back and answer your question, like how that relates to like the gospel of courage or whatever. Like, so there's, the podcast is going to be this space of like both talking about courage and how it has saved my life, and also, essentially just inviting people to come and talk to me where they're willing to choose the courage to like get naked with their humanity, like bring me your story of how you have chosen courage in your life. But then also, will you be willing to let me ask you literally anything to talk more about this, including where are you avoiding courage in your life right now? And that's where I feel like my like strength is as a friend, to my friends. And it's where I feel like my strength is, because I'm someone who has like struggled with suicidal ideation for a long time. And so for me, like, I feel like every day is courage. Everything I do is courage. And there are still ways that I avoid it, but like, it's the only reason that I'm here. And so those are the two things that I want to do in the world. I want to like help other people choose the courage to stay alive, and furthermore to like go and be their full selves. And I believe that everybody has a part of them that was made to create, you know? And so, that's what I want to do. I want to give people space to choose courage for little things and big things in their lives and to just keep going.
I like that you use the metaphor nakedness, because I think like right when we started this podcast, when we were doing all these bloopers, when Jen and I were just like shooting the shit, I said something like, it was so much easier to just like get naked than have a conversation with somebody like in high school or something like that. And so it's like, it is, when you think about it, like how many times have people had sex with people and they don't really even know them? They've never really had a conversation with them, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's literally easier to be like physically naked than to stand to the nakedness of your truth. And like, mm-hmm. I think that's huge. And I think as we get older, I still want to be naked all the time, but I'm also learning to be,
but in a safe place where you're loved and admired.
Right. Exactly. And not in some like random Pizza Hut parking lot, or in the bathtub at the writing workshop where I'm sexually harassing all of the students. Learn my lesson. Sorry, everybody. But yeah, no, I think that's really important. And I think you do a really good job of that, from what I know of you from the workshop, what I know of you on your Instagram, and what hopefully I can't wait to learn more about, when your podcast comes out. Like, I'm really excited for you.
Yeah. It's funny. You said the thing about the photography project that I was just a part of, and that was my friend David Lawrence, who's really a lot more like family, and he's a photographer. And, we were just talking about how like a few years ago I was exploring this, like legitimately what you were just talking about, this thing of like, what is it about nakedness? Like, what is it about nakedness with our bodies? And how does that relate to nakedness with our souls, our spirits, our inner knowing, our divine, like whatever those things. And I was exploring like, how can I, interact with that as a person and as an artist. And I had all these different ideas. And one of them was this like performance art piece, but like, I don't really live in the right place for that. I live in a little bit of a small town where we depend a lot on our income for people to not think that we're too far out there. A lot of those conversations, and then fast forward a couple of years, and David, who I had a lot of those conversations with, starts this project where he's going to photograph all these people naked and in their underwear. And I was standing there at the gallery this week looking at all these pictures, and I was like, this is like very adjacent to exactly the conversations that I was having. And I was like, I had these feelings come up of like being a little bit jealous that he went and did this thing that I talked about. And my friend was with me, and I looked at her and I was like, oh my God, I love this. And this is really important. And I want to interact with the body part of this nakedness, but like, I've never been about the body part. I've always been about the conversation and the soul part. And so I just looked at her and like got tears in my eyes and was like, that's the thing that I'm doing. Like, that's the thing that I'm starting with the podcast. Like, I'm actually doing it. And that was just this really cool moment.
Well, and there's those big magic bubbles too, of like, sometimes I think it's almost like we receive this idea and then we verbalize it. We don't really follow through that with this idea in the way that we would have initially imagined was available to us. This has happened to me before too. I've had a divine inspiration of sorts and then tell somebody else about it. They manifest that in a way that pisses me off because it's so clearly my idea. But at the same time, it did really good work and it started a really important conversation. And it also showed me that wasn't the avenue in which I would have presented it anyway. Like, nothing has actually been taken from me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it this other way where I can serve it more better and fully in the truest version of myself. Right.
Absolutely. Like
performance art is tough because as somebody who has performed, and Vanessa too, we perform some weird shit, and like, you either are in a city where people are down for what you're doing, or you have nobody in the house, or you just have people who are accidentally here who don't want to be a part of this at all. Ugh, it's smart to have not done it in a theater, in a community where you know there's not like a theater crowd, you know?
Yeah.
I have a loud lawnmower outside, so I'm trying not to let the lawnmower sound pick up, but, my favorite, My favorite example of that is I did two, like my first two shows I ever did. One was in Kansas City. It was at Records with Merit. It's like this record store. And there was like 15 people there, and they treated it like a real show, and everyone was excited, and some woman called me Jim Morrison, and it was just like awesome, and I was like high five, like it was just like one of these like really awesome performances, right? And then I'm in this small mining town in New Mexico at a bar that's run with like all these lesbians, and you think there'd be some women's support there. I'm not joking you. Every single person in the bar walked outside. Like, nobody would stand and even listen to my shit. So it was fucking hilarious. Like, within two shows, I got the full spectrum of, like, performing live, and I was like, I couldn't have asked for anything better. Like, it just made me so happy, like, that I had that moment where I literally cleared the room.
Listen, nothing will ever shatter your dreams like the sound of a bus tub at the height of a poem. you can't get over that. You just know it happened and it's out there and that your heart is not respected. And that's just how it is now. Well, so what I want to move into in that regard then is like, LA, we talked, you know, we've got this theme of revenge and redemption, and we couldn't figure out which one was going to be more prevalent. So we picked both of them, and it turns out they're almost hand in hand. So in considering redemption or revenge in relationship to your work, like, what kind of thoughts have come up for you on this subject? Do you feel like you have a redemption story, or that you're like operating from a place of revenge, like a Ricky Lake episode, like a Look at Me Now? Like, where is the origin of kind of your journey?
I feel like when I first had this question, as I was like thinking about this podcast episode, I was like, I don't resonate with revenge at all. And then last night or the night before, I was laying in bed and thinking about it, not on purpose. I wanted to be sleeping. I realized, like, if you looked at my writing in notebooks my whole life, like, revenge was always against myself for not being enough. And so it's present in my work hard, like really hard. And redemption is like, I'm trying to save myself from that. I'm trying to save myself from becoming the martyr that I was trained to be.
I resonate with that so hard. In my episode on revenge, I talked about like how mad I was at myself for just like kind of like wasting time or not knowing who I was sooner or whatever. And that's such a poignant way to put it, like revenge against itself. You know, like I've been trying. I always say this, like when I think of myself younger, like memories or something, it's like it's not me. I'm as if I'm remembering a scene from a movie. I have a very strong disconnection of who I used to be. Like there is just no relation to that person anymore whatsoever. So I think that's really an apt description. Like I was like I wanted to get revenge against that younger self for like whatever those decisions were.
This is such a, I don't know if I've ever thought about this before. When I talked to a couple of students today and gave them this task of personifying their resistance, which feel free, capital R resistance, like really personifying it. Because I accidentally did this a few years ago. And like, I know exactly what the guardian at the gate looks like. And I did that because then I can yell at it. Like I can get out of my way, bitch. Anyway, they both personified their resistance as themselves. And I felt like blown away by that, because the way that I, maybe it's my arrogance. I don't know. I'm down a rabbit hole of like, what might be wrong with me? Because here's the thing. I had two thoughts. One, I'm so egotistical. I don't think I'm ever the problem. Or I love myself enough to believe that I am truly good at my core. Like I believe in the origin of me is good and light. And therefore, that origin would never stand in its own way, mm-hmm. right? So my resistance personified is a conglomeration, like a Mr. Potato Head, of all of these different characteristics of people or experiences that I'm afraid of, right? So like I can give it skin and hair and a personality, but I also know what's clamoring on the inside of that creature. And I don't know, I never thought to make it myself. I never thought of myself in that kind of reflective way of like, I'm in my own way. I don't know why. I just also don't think that like I'm talented. I think that I am a conduit for genius. Like I download whatever the voice is talking about, and that's my job. I translate, but I'm not in charge of this shit. So there's no pressure to do it well because it's not my shit.
That's so funny because so much of what you just said, but not as funny, but is awesome. But I just wrote this piece yesterday about my muse is my own mind. And so it's funny that to have that juxtaposition of like, it had never occurred to you that your resistance is yourself. Like, whereas like you gave me permission, you and Ash and WWKC like challenged the hell out of me and the Confessing Animals podcast, like of who are your gatekeepers. And I had to look and say, like, I wrote that out so many times, like, who are the people that live rent-free in my head that are dictating what I'm doing with my life? And like, why am I giving them permission to be there? And then that really brought me to this place of recognizing, like, every time I'm looking at those people, it's not really about them. It's about my own resistance to courage in those moments, because it's terrifying and because it's risk of their perception or whatever the things are. And then to come to that place of like, my redemption story is believing that my muse is my own mind and not something outside of me. Like that's what I'm trying to get to. And yeah,
I mean, I think this is fascinating because it's either like, I got more work to do, or we could both be right, or somewhere in the middle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think my whole thing that I was saying before about non-judgment about like resisting dualistic thinking, like that's how we, I don't think I'm right. And I think we're different people that need different motivations and different strategies and different understandings of how we function and who we are and who the world is. Like, I very rarely anymore feel like there's this place of like, this is the right thing. This is a good thing. This is a bad thing. Like in everything, I'm trying to step away from that dualistic thinking.
Absolutely.
Well, that's really hard for me, like with the duality, you know, because like earlier I'm like, either you're rich or you're fucking living in the gutter. You know what I mean? Like I'm aware that there is a lot of in between, but it's like I've always been very extreme. I'm extreme in my emotions. I'm extreme in my thinking. I'm extreme in my like decisions. Like, and Jen, going back to what you said, it's just like, yeah, like I've always known that I'm the problem. Like I'm the block. Like I'm getting in my own way. And I returned to my studio yesterday and I hadn't been there in a while. And I was like reading through some notes in some of my notebooks. And it was like, you know, am I afraid to sit alone at his desk? Like, am I afraid of what might come, or more afraid of like what doesn't come? Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm sitting blankly waiting for no return. Like, what is this life to be? Like there was like this constant questioning. It's just like, what's stopping me? And when I was at the cabin, I had to gut punch, like, I just look over at Ash and I was like, I'm 38. Like, I know that doesn't mean anything, but like, for some reason, it just kind of like, oh, I'm 38. And it's just like, what's stopping me? Like, why? I know what's inside of me, and why hasn't it come out? You know what I mean? And it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Well, I don't know if I believe in a mass dislodging, right? Like, I think that when I tell people to think about writing a book, like a gestation period, like it's, if you're once you start it, we got to start it. That's kind of how I like demand my clients sign long-term contracts. Like, you're committing to this child. And at some point you will have to go through labor, and it's going to be tough, but we're going to get through it. And Vanessa, too, your point about like, am I my own resistance? Like, why haven't I done this? What hasn't come out of me? I don't believe in a great dislodging, because you're constantly working. Like, you're both constantly working. I see you in process of creative endeavor almost all of the time. There's not a day in this life that both of you aren't posting, you know, your experiences on social media, directing people towards moral things that you think are important to consider, conversations you want to have that are uncomfortable or real or authentic, all of the above. I think that it chips away. And I, from where I stand, I remember I kept hearing this theme in with writers and people that I treated as idols, that they said basically, lower your expectations. If you don't have an end goal for your dream, like to be a writer, and you just go with it, and you be a writer, everything that happens will feel kind of like a miracle. And you'll go in all these different directions that you never imagined going, because if you'd been so stringent and specific on your structure, you would have missed all of these things, right? Like if you're just, it's here to Hollywood or nothing, you're going to miss all of those incredible moments when you could have just been a writer in all these different contexts. And so when you're creating consistently, I think you're forever digging, you're forever mining. And like you are dislodging these things. I think the surprise is in how much you contain, right? You want to take a big chunk out of there. Maybe that's another way to frame it. But like, I don't think it's not an orgasm. You're not going to be done with it and feel empty.
That's why I can't finish my book, 1,000 Baroque Orgasms, because it's not an orgasm.
It's like, not, that's the title of your episode.
It's not an orgasm. Okay, we need to put a pin in, it's no great dislodging. There's something there's a whole fucking university to be reckoned with in that. Like, that's fucking incredible. But LA, you can respond, but I also am like really curious about, I want to hear your poem. I want to hear more about like how redemption has come through for you.
Sure. Okay. What I was going to say is, and now I don't remember exactly what I was answering, but I made a note so I wouldn't forget what I wanted to say, because that's how I have to function. I have to take notes. Sometimes in conversations with friends, like if I'm going to dinner with a friend, I'm like, listen, I'm bringing a notebook. Please don't be offended. It's so that I interrupt you less. In terms of the great dislodging, that's what it was. Like, when I came to this place of recognizing that I had to really reconcile the faith system that I grew up in to like decide whether or not I was a part of it anymore, which is, it just doesn't fit. Like none of the things ever fit me, because no one word or label can fit me that someone else can interpret a different way. So I just try not to use them. But the reality is that like, it wasn't that I could just throw that label off and expect that it would just be this big piece of me that's gone, or any of those other things. Like, it's an everyday realizing that, like you said something earlier, and I thought about a Bible verse. Like, I don't remember what it was now, but it was something, it's gone. Anyway, I think about scriptures all the time because it's like the language that I spoke in. That's never going to not be part of my world. The thing that changed for me is like, I grew up in a very like missionary heavy world, and I did missions work in Africa and India and other places. And I grew up with parents that worked full time for a missionary organization, and it was a lot. And I realized at some point that the thing that I was going to do moving forward was that I was not going to speak again with certainty about things I couldn't be certain about. And so the thing that you said about like coming to that notebook and going, or those notes that you had written and going, am I afraid of this thing or this thing? The more that I live and breathe, the more I feel like the reality is that it's not this thing or this thing. It's this thing and some other things I don't even see, right? Like that I haven't found yet. And if I just stay open every day, I'm going to find more of that.
That's so powerful and so strong. Yeah. And I think, and I hope at least, the questioning is part of that being open. You know what I mean? So whether I'm saying, is it this or is it this, you know, just being able to question is part of the seeking or the searching or the being open to find out, okay, well, yeah, it's probably a lot of things that I'll never really quite realize or pinpoint or have a specific letter for. But,
well, the answer is yes.
Yes.
Yes, it's all of these things, right? It's kind of like, I feel like if you took every word or, you know, phrase, adage, whatever, and you pinned it up like just one long line. And then every time you had another emotion, you had to go and see if you already had that emotion or put it in like a similar category. What you would find is that you keep coming back to some version of this same big question, right? Like it's like insecurity, is fear, is trauma, is like, there's so many things. Jealousy, we talked about this. Jealousy is not an emotion. Stop telling people that jealousy is an emotion. It's fucking not. It is a collection of emotions with like a hat on it. Like, mm-hmm. it's there's a lot of things that create jealousy. And it has, that's why it's so complicated, you know? And so I think telling people that writing is one specific thing or one specific way, creativity is one thing or one specific way, like you fail yourself and you start to feel like you're missing things. You start to feel like somehow you didn't get all the info on what it was going to take to walk this walk or go this route. And that's just not true. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody's experience is uniquely their own, which is why there's a million self-help books we've bought, because we identify with like one shimmering version of that question that's being asked. And then we only take what we need from it. But we're all asking these questions.
Well, I'm really curious about like limitations are good, but like don't adhere to strict definitions almost, right? Like LA, you want to set some limits because like you're doing a lot and you want to maybe pare that down and focus on a few, like, you know, a few things, right? But then, you know, don't limit yourself in terms of like, this is like the only definition of writing or art. And you said, oh, I just lost it. It was so good.
I can't be, I don't speak certainly of things.
Exactly.
I won't speak again with certainty about things I cannot be certain.
Yes, 100%. Like that's it. And I'm so glad, like coming from the kind of background that you had to having kind of like that realization and then kind of like implement that going forward. Like that's huge. Like I think that's so important. And that's where a lot of our disconnection is right now in our society and our culture, and whether it's on, you know, social media, in person, excuse me, our adherence to like these strict, this is what this means, and I am certain about it, where it's like, no, you're not certain at all. You know what I mean? Like I had a discussion or an argument really with my partner's friend this past weekend, and he thought he's like implying some kind of Socratic method, but like was not implying the Socratic method, but like, before debates would happen, they would lay out the agreement of what the definition of each term was. So we all made sure that like we could understand each other. Well, that just doesn't exist anymore. And you mentioned earlier, like so many words and experience, like we're all coming at it from like such a different point of view. That's like, we're not laying the groundwork to even have a proper debate or discussion now, because like, we're not even agreeing upon the language.
I mean, I think that the intense, like religion is so much about judgment that like the idea of non-judgment is revolutionary. And so, excuse me. So to come to like Jen, you were just saying about all of the emotions that are encapsulated in jealousy, like to come to every emotion and every reaction that I have and ask it questions prevents me from judging myself and prevents me from judging other people. And I was talking to somebody this week and they were like, they're going to hear this. And I love them. And I want them to know that I adore them. Right. And they're amazing. And they're so kind and compassionate. And they had this like one-off thing where they were like super judgmental about people who like back their cars into parking spaces. And it was such a trivial thing, but the way that they spoke was with such judgment. And I was like, listen, I'm going to come at you about this because like, you don't know what that person that backed into their parking space is dealing with. Like, you don't know if they witnessed their friend get run over by somebody backing up when they were like, whatever the things are, right? Like there are always a million possibilities. And if we assume malicious intent, if we go into something with the assumption of there is a right, there is a wrong, and you're not in it, if you're not on the same page as me, like we just cause a world of war and judgment and of not being able to understand each other and be on the same page. And so for me, like coming to a place of being able to even see other people's perspectives requires me to come without judgment, with like the possibility that what they're coming with is just as true as my perspective, even if they differ.
Well, and this very specifically is a subject I feel like I keep breaking down, right? Because I think I'm probably inherently a mean girl. I think a lot of shit, and I think I'm right about a lot of shit. So I have to be very aware of that on a daily basis. Vanessa knows, because I've been sharing my hero's journey in the last week. I did this thing where I decided very presently in a situation that I was going to allow myself to feel all the judgments that I had about what I was fucking looking at. I was like, oh, felt it all. And then I decided that I had to, in order to balance that out, act with compassion. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to go into the full example, but I let myself feel all those things. And then I did the antithesis of what my judgment told me to do, right? My judgment told me to root down in being angry about something that I didn't have control over. And my intent at compassion said, have a conversation with this person. Ask how you can be helpful. Ask how you can participate in this being a healthy experience for everybody that will be impacted by it. And like, I have to keep breaking that down all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing about going back to the dislodging. Like, if I look at all of this, like geologically, if I am constantly rooting down, I am mining through, I'm going to hit all of these different layers, all of these different levels, right? Like, we keep coming back to layers too. Sometimes you're just going to hit a big pile of shit. You know, when they come looking for our society, you're going to find a bunch of diapers and tires somewhere. And at other times, you're going to find the Palace of Versailles. Like, there's, this is all relevant because you're digging.
But and it's all honest,
right? Mm-hmm. It's all valid. It's all real. Every question you ask yourself, yes, you're scared of all of these things. That's fine. You hit you hit like a scared gas pocket.
Well, and I was just gonna say, I think like what you just said, Jen, about acting with compassion, like letting all of that, all of the feelings of that judgment come, right? Like. So when I say like, I ask those things questions, like that is really about letting it come without repressing it. Because I think a lot of people think that like to not be judgmental is to repress the judgment that you're feeling. When in reality, it's to like, let it come.
Yeah. Feel that and then let act it, differently.
And then, yes. And then be intentional about what you want your next steps to be. And so for me, like I start with like first step is non-judgment. Like let the things come without calling them bad or good or anything, without assigning worth, just let them come. Okay. They've come. Now what? Now is my goal is always like empathy, compassion, and love. Right. And what does love as an action is my like Instagram username and has been my username for everything for a really long time, which of course came from a Bible verse. And, but it stayed because that's the goal. Like for me, it's what is, when I have all of those feelings, if I can let them come and recognize that sometimes they're coming because I'm someone who cares about the right thing. I'm someone who cares about love. And so these things are coming up in me because I think this person isn't loving or whatever. Right. And so then it's choosing compassion and love. And I think it's really, I just rambled all of that to say that I think that it's really important specifically to recognize that it's not about repressing judgment. It's about allowing those feelings to come without judging them.
And yeah. It's like not even, right. And it's like not even judging the judgmental thoughts, you know, like working through my anxiety and panic attacks or like, don't fight off the panic attack when it comes. You have to like allow it to happen. Cause like the more you struggle against it, like almost the worse it is. So it's like, I always have to say, welcome anxiety, welcome panic attack, and just kind of like let it happen. You know what I mean? And then, like you said, and then you make your intentional next steps, right? Like, am I going to freak out and go to the hospital and tell everybody at Walgreens that I'm dying and nobody cares about me? Or, you know, am I going to be a rational human being? I'm not quite sure yet, but like
that was an oddly specific example. what I would like to say, Vanessa, though, is that I really like that you welcomed anxiety and the panic attack as if the two shittiest people you know came to your party. Like they saw the invite on Facebook and thought, this is where we should be tonight. And no, they shouldn't.
Exactly.
Like, ugh,
and then welcome. They fucking showed up. Well, like you said earlier, like inherently, like I'm a bit of a mean girl too, right? But like I think I'm a mean girl and really like judgmental, like on the surface, on like very surface things, right? And then like when it comes to the true nature and soul and like reality, it's like I'm wildly compassionate against like anybody and everything, you know, like I'm not judging, like I'm the bitch who's going to be like, look at that motherfucker backing up into his bar. Like I'll talk about like these trivial things, but like I would never judge on like a severe level someone's life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the things that people are usually judged for.
Right.
I'm always like at bat for that person. Right. So it's right. Like, it's a weird, like surface mean girl, but like truly like I fucking love you.
Don't tell them we're soft. Don't tell them we're soft. We're cutting this out of the podcast.
This is just our secret. Do not tell on us, LA.
Listen, I love that because I resonate with that a lot. And then what changed that for me was like recognizing that if I'm going to be judgmental in this way about this petty thing, I'm making it okay for other people to be judgmental about anything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it really called me all the way the fuck out that I could not be that way. Like I cannot be judgmental about any of the things because it just does give other people permission. Like I have to kind of be against that in everything. And that's really hard because there are things that I want to be really judgmental about with people, like a lot.
I feel that in my bones. And the cold sweat of that reality is that here's the thing. I think about all the, I haven't been in a church intentionally or forced to be there in a long time. So I've only been to churches that I wanted to be at. But I've still got scripture running around in my head on a daily basis, right? And I think that trying to find some new terminology that allowed me to like create my own moral structure adjacent or at least including the beliefs that I derived from that origin. If I believe these things, if I think these things about other people, then what I'm holding space for in the universe is for other people to think these things about me. And if I think these things about people and I think that they think these things about me, it gives me permission to hate myself. And I just keep looking at that because it was recently brought to my attention that I said, stop being so goddamn negative. And listen, I run my mouth constantly. Like Vanessa, I got a lot of surface judgments about, and I'm very observational. I'm like, look at this bullshit. Look at this idiot. What the fuck is going on? I am East Coast, Midwest, all the time with a West Coast heart, you know? But I realized like that's the next work I have to do in taming this kind of judgmental whiplash I have for the world. I don't want to be judged. I don't even want to be seen. I'd rather just be invisible than deal with all of these like forks that you get poked with by being a human. And that's the protective layer, right? So giving yourself permission to be compassionate, I think, is also permission to be more tender in the world. You're saying like, I'm leaving this armor at home and I'm going to try really hard to be open so that there's less ugliness. And that's, I mean, it's scary, scary, scary.
The interconnectedness of everything. So like you said something about that earlier and, you know, I think for me, a huge part of my journey has been realizing that like the interconnectedness of everything, right? Like you talked about with culture, like if you're going to look at this culture, you're going to find a big heaping pile of diapers and tires, right? But you're also going to find Versailles, right? Like it's all there. And all of it, butterfly effect, right? Everything affects everything else because it's all connected. And so for me, like this work of non-judgment so that we can have honest conversations, so that we can expose the parts of us that need to be open is the same work of anti-fascism and not an anti-capitalism and anti-racism and opening up the world. Like I can't love trans people if I don't root out the transphobia that was inherent in my upbringing, right? Like I can't be anti-racist if I don't learn how that is all intertwined in all the things and all of that is interconnected. And so for me, like in being like about social justice, the way that I am in my heart and the way that I try to be in the world with my choices and my money and all of the things, like I have to recognize that that's absolutely connected to whether or not I treat someone like shit for the way they park in my head or outside in the world, you know, like,
right.
And it doesn't feel like it. It feels like that's this really big stretch, but it's really not.
No, it's your every action in every way, every thought is delivering the full truth of you, you know? And so I think that you bring it all together in that interconnectedness. Like this is all relevant. It's all happening within one person, one life, one time. I'd really love to move into hearing some of your writing.
Okay. I don't often finish pieces, so I wouldn't say that I feel like this is like finished, but I called it Belonging, and I wrote it in July of this year. I always thought belonging was evasive, like a rare bird I might never see or I might have seen but could have been mistaken because I wasn't carrying a bird guide, and so many look so similar in flight. I don't fly, but I've always wanted to. I wonder if I carried fewer burdens, if I might be light enough to fly, or perhaps if I lessen my load by accepting myself. The burden of not enough is so much bigger than the load of you don't have to be good, and I struggle so much to put them down. I have a phone full of messages and boxes full of letters that tell me I am loved, I am wanted, I am seen, I am treasured. Still, I see bad where others have said good. I see disappointment where others have marked me with gratitude. I see failure where I have been admired. I have thought perhaps the problem is with my eyes, but it seems to be with my heart, with my head, with my ache. No reflection, no picture, no memory, no letter, no validation, no gift, no treasure could ever say loud enough or clear enough that I belong, that I am good enough for me to hear or believe this forever. This is the cross I have had to learn to bear daily, these beams that intersect at being and presence, this holy phrase spoken by the creator of everything over a magical burning but not burnt bush, this answer to an age-old question, that one of identity, of credential, of validity, I am. I am. And therein lies my holiness. Therein lies my inherent belonging, my inborn worth, my unwavering value. I am enough.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Confessing Animals Podcast. To get the full extended video cast, the backstage VIP video full interviews, which include more poems and more discussion, join us on Patreon, Confessing Animals Podcast. And check out L.A. Rockmore and her upcoming podcast at gospelofcourage.com.